Welcome back to AEIOU, the podcast about Austria. This is Andrew, your host. In the last episode, we started to discuss the 1848 revolutions in Europe, how they began in Italy and quickly spread to France and thereafter across the continent. But we left aside the matter of how the revolutions also spread locally over the Italian peninsula, essentially bringing Italy's struggle for independence right to Austria's door. Important to understanding how the revolution spread in Italy is recognizing that part of what motivated the revolution in Sicily was the foreign nature of the Bourbon dynasty and the nationalistic character that the Sicilian revolutionaries therefore adopted. They flew the tricolor flag of Italian nationalism and therefore inspired other nationalist activists in the process. Key to the way in which the revolution broke out across Italy was the role of Pope Pius IX, who became Pope in 1846. Despite his never publicly expressing support for liberalism or Italian nationalism, it was widely suspected that the new Pope was sympathetic to both. There was even talk of the Pope being the eventual ruler of a united Italian state. It is important to bear in mind that, in mid-19th century Europe, the Pope was not only the head of the Roman Catholic Church, he was also a secular monarch over his own country, called the Papal States, which included land in the current-day Italian provinces of Catania, Lazio, Emilia-Romagna, Marche, and Umbria. Most importantly, the Papal States controlled the entirety of the city of Rome, which was its capital. If the Bourbons ruled Italy from Sicily to Naples and the Pope ruled it from Rome up to the northeast, the remainder of Italy was divided into five parts: the Duchies of Parma, Modena, and Tuscany, the Kingdom of Lombardy, Venetia, and the Kingdom of Piedmont, Sardinia. As you might recall from a previous episode, Lombardy, Venetia was made part of the Austrian Empire at the Congress of Vienna. The Duchy of Tuscany was also a Habsburg possession, although it was ruled separately from the Austrian Empire. Similarly, since the Congress of Vienna, the Duchy of Modena was ruled separately from the Empire by a cadet branch of the House of Habsburg. The Duchy of Parma had been a Habsburg possession ruled separately from the Empire, but as noted in the last episode, since the death of Duchess Maria Louise, it had been ruled by the Bourbons, just like the Kingdom of the Two Sicilies. That left the Kingdom of Piedmont-Sardinia, with its capital at Turin. For more than 100 years, the kingdom had been ruled by the House of Savoy. In 1848, its king was Charles Albert. Initial success of the revolutionaries in Sicily, who were granted a constitution by King Ferdinand II but continued to press for the expulsion of the Bourbons, inspired similar revolutions on the Italian peninsula. In Piedmont, Sardinia, Tuscany, and the Papal States, constitutions were granted preemptively by the rulers to head off the revolutionaries and prevent open revolt. By March, cities in the Austrian imperial territory of Lombardy, Venetia were in revolt, specifically Venice in the northeast and Milan in the northwest. Violence broke out first in Milan, where in a matter of 5 days, insurgents were able to defeat the Austrian army garrisoned in Milan and led by Marshal Joseph Radetzky. Radetzky retreated from Milan and a provisional government was declared. One day later, King Charles Albert of Piedmont-Sardinia, seeing an opportunity to take up the banner of Italian unification and independence, declared war on Austria and invaded Lombardy, hoping to occupy Austrian territory outside the city of Milan. Charles Albert's army advanced quickly across northern Italy, finally being stopped at the Adige River in the northeastern part of the peninsula at the end of April. This left much of Veneto still under Austrian control. However, in the capital city of Veneto, that is Venice, a revolution similar to that in Milan had taken place as well, ejecting Habsburg rulers and establishing the Republic of San Marco. However, just as it appeared the Austrians might have to come to terms with Charles Albert and the forces of Sardinia-Piedmont, the Pope bought. He had been supporting Charles Albert's campaign thus far, including contributing thousands of troops from the Papal States, but he declared in May 1848 that he had to withdraw his support because he could not support a war between two Catholic states. The army of the Papal States ignored the Pope's call to stand down, however, and a general revolt broke out in Rome. The Pope fled to Gita and a Roman Republic, allied with the other revolutionaries, was declared. Meanwhile, Austria won its first victory against Sardinia-Piedmont in early May. Soon, King Ferdinand of the Two Sicilies followed the Pope's example and withdrew from the war against Austria. However, unlike the Pope, he did not flee Naples but stuck around to put down the revolution decisively in his own lands. By July, Austria began a counteroffensive and by the beginning of August, Charles Albert's army was in retreat. Austria reoccupied Milan on August 4th and the rest of Lombardy on August 9th. The revolutionaries in Milan resisted but were crushed. in honor of Austria's victory over Sardinia Piedmont. The musician Johann Strauss composed the famous Raditzky March. Some Milanese exiles joined with the remaining revolutionary forces and, led by Giuseppe Garibaldi, continued to fight Austria, thereafter aligned with the Bourbon states and the Pope, until the following summer. Ultimately, the revolutionaries lost. In March of 1849, Charles Albert again tried his hand against Austria. However, in less than a week, Raditzky was again victorious. Charles Albert ultimately abdicated a few months later in favor of his son, Victor Emmanuel, who would go on to become the first king of the United Kingdom of Italy. But that was still more than a decade away. In the meantime, the remaining revolts on the Italian peninsula were eventually put down. Garibaldi went into exile in North Africa, and things returned more or less to the status quo. That completes how the Austrians ultimately defeated the forces of Italian independence. However, despite the complexity and length of this war, it was the lesser conflict that Austria faced during the revolutions of 1848. Rather, the greater challenge came first from within Vienna itself and eventually from Hungary. As we noted earlier, the revolution went from Sicily to France, with Paris in open revolt and King Louis-Philippe abdicating in late February. By early March, there were uprisings in Baden, Wiesbaden, and Württemberg. The watershed moment for the revolution in the Habsburg Empire was March 3rd. On that date, Louis Kossuth, a Hungarian lawyer of noble background, he rose to speak in the Hungarian legislature in favor of constitutional reform. As a noble, Kossuth held a seat in the upper house of the legislature, but he had spent the previous decade building his reputation as a liberal, reform-minded politician. For these reasons, his speech electrified the audience, and word soon spread of the speech to Vienna. The Austrian capital was already seeing demonstrations for constitutional reform inspired by the immediate victory in France over the monarchy. Before continuing, we should remember that Austria was being run in 1848 by the so-called Secret State Conference, which was a regency council that governed in the stead of Emperor Ferdinand, who was developmentally disabled. This council consisted of the Emperor's brother Archduke Ludwig, Interior Minister Karl Overath, and Foreign Minister Metternich, who was also Chancellor and thus the head of government. It was these three men who would be tasked with answering the calls for constitutional reform. Although the month of March 1848 began with Kossuth's speech in the Hungarian legislature and demonstrations in Vienna, it took 10 days for Metternich to respond. By the time he did, the crowds in Vienna had grown angry and were circulating their own petitions to make demands of the government. Metternich's response was to deploy the army among the crowds to retain order, but when the troops fired on the crowds, the situation became explosive. Archduke Ludwig asked for Metternich's resignation, and Metternich conceded, ultimately fleeing the city and eventually the country. As Metternich was leaving Vienna, Kossuth was just arriving and was greeted in the imperial capital as a hero. The emperor granted the concessions Kossuth had asked, and a new government was formed in Hungary with Kossuth serving as Minister of Finance. Back in Vienna, Metternich was succeeded as Chancellor by Karl Overath, with the office now called the Minister President. It would retain this name until the end of the empire in 1918. Karl Overath's administration was short-lived, however. He resigned only a month later for health reasons. Karl Overath's successor, Count Karl Ludwig of Fickelmund, also lasted only a month. Baron Franz von Pillersdorf, who managed to hold on to office for 2 full months, lasted long enough to grant a new constitution. This constitution, called the Pillersdorf Constitution, conceded many of the reforms demanded by the crowds in Vienna. However, the Pillersdorf Constitution disappeared along with Pillersdorf himself. Instead, in reaction to the Pillersdorf Constitution, elections were called for a new imperial diet, which excluded Hungary since Hungary now had its own legislature. The imperial diet would be tasked with improving upon the Pillersdorf Constitution. The election was held in June and the new legislators seated in July, whereupon they began the work of a new constitution. Meanwhile, as we discussed earlier in this episode, Italian nationalists had invaded Austrian lands in northern Italy. In addition to this pressure on Vienna from the south, there was also pressure being exerted from the north, based on the revolutionary activity that had broken out across German-speaking Europe. Talks were underway for the creation of a newly expanded German confederation to be seated at Frankfurt. Elections were held for this new assembly on May 1st, and it convened for the first time a couple of weeks later. Among the questions it sought to answer was what political form a more greatly empowered German union would take. Perhaps more important was the question of who would lead it. As previously established, Austria and Prussia, already rivals, would be the two most likely candidates, but before that issue could be settled, Vienna faced more difficulties. The creation of the Frankfurt Parliament and a revitalized German nationalism raised the fears of Slavic-speaking populations in Bohemia, Silesia, and Galicia, who ultimately began demanding their own greater autonomy and constitutional reforms that would recognize their rights. In addition, a pan-Slavic Congress was convened in Prague in June, adding to the forces pulling on Vienna. Things in the capital city were delicate. For his own safety, the emperor had retreated to an estate in Moravia to wait out the instability. We'll stop here for this episode and pick up next time with the counter-revolution. Thanks for listening.